Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of Grow Street Journal. Today's guest is David Krantz. David is an epigenetic coach. If you're wondering what epigenetics is, so am I. We talk about it, and we talk about genetics and how it influences cannabis consumption. Hope you enjoy the episode.
Could you tell me a little bit about yourself, David?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am an epigenetic health coach, meaning I help people discover what their genetics has to say about their personal health and what type of food and supplements and herbs are really going to help optimize genetic expression and create the best health outcomes. So I work with people on a coaching level and on an informational level to really give people information that can empower them to make better decisions about their life.
Cool. All right. And so we're talking about genes. So in my very limited knowledge of this, is this to do with hereditary things that are passed on from your parents? I don't know much beyond that, but I know when you go and fill out a form at the doctor's, they'll often ask you, do you have a history of mental illness or cancer and all these kind of different things? And I assume this is all to do with genetics.
Yeah, so that's a really good place to start. This is looking at, yes, heritable traits, and specifically what I'm looking at with things related to cannabis in the human genome are these specific individual little places in the DNA that differ from person to person. And so 99.9% of our DNA is exactly the same, and it's that 0.01 difference that gives you your hair color and gives me my eye color and my skin color and all that, and all of these physical traits that are kind of easy to understand that there's a genetic component to them. But what we've learned in the past 15 or so years since we've mapped the human genome is that almost every single biochemical process in our body, all of the tiny little molecules and pathways and neurotransmitters and hormones, all of those things have a genetic component to them too. And by doing these large population kind of correlation studies where you take a group of people, say, you know, this group of people smokes cannabis and they've smoked cannabis their whole life, this group of people hasn't. By analyzing their DNA and looking at these specific places in the DNA, you can get a somewhat of an understanding of what these genes are doing as far as people's preferences or way they metabolize different substances or the way someone responds to fat versus carbs versus protein, that type of thing. And so when we're talking about individual response to cannabis, it's pretty easy to kind of imagine that, just not everyone responds to it the same way. I mean, this is something that for me, it took me a while to figure out. I remember being in high school and just not understanding that not everyone loved weed the same way I did. And actually looking at some of this information around the genetics really actually explains that in a way that is objective and gives you some understanding of A, why some people, don't enjoy the feeling of it, and B, why some people really do, and why it might actually be balancing for those people. I think it just sheds light on this from multiple different angles. The other piece here too is that, we're not going to get too far into this today, but the epigenetic side of things is how those genes actually can change their expression over time, where the code doesn't change, but it's almost like a dimmer switch where the product of those genes can get turned up or turned down in response to different things in the environment, say like a stressful event, or say if you, eat food and you're missing a nutrient for an extended period of time, your body's going to compensate and respond. And there's a process that happens in terms of controlling those genes. And that's epigenetics. And that's kind of the angle that I use to help people really optimize their diet and nutrition and everything. And hopefully that helps kind of orient you a little bit more to what I'm doing.
It's awesome. Really nice background. Yeah, thank you. So is it fair to say that there are potentially two types of genetics in terms of, you talked about the hereditary, the eye color, maybe your physical appearance. these are things you can't easily change or change at all throughout your life, no matter how much you kind of wish you have purple colored eyes. And then we talk about certain things like less tangible, perhaps predisposition towards certain diseases. And that's the area that over time we can change within ourselves. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I would say that there's flexibility within both of those things. I mean, you see sometimes in, say, for example, there's an autoimmune disease called vitiligo, where people's skin pigment essentially disappears over time. And there's epigenetic components to that, where, you know, that's like what Michael Jackson had, right? So even sometimes things that we consider to be very hard, fast, unchangeable, in given the right situation and given the right set of circumstances, our body has a lot more control potentially over changing those things. It's kind of an artificial distinction that we make, because we tend to have, you know, preconceptions about what is changeable and what's malleable. But the world of epigenetics really kind of opens that up to, you know, a little bit more revisiting of those things to some degree.
It's deeply interesting. Wow. And it kind of, when we think about it with cannabis, it actually throws on its head conventional wisdom, everything that we know about cannabis in terms of having sativas and indicas marketed as nighttime medicine or daytime medicine, and all this kind of the whole structure upon which we classify and market cannabis, it seems could be at jeopardy here if you're saying that actually the same bag of herb could affect you and I completely different ways based on our genetics.
Yes, absolutely. And that's actually something that I have talked to quite a few people about, is I have a couple people I know that indicas tend to get them, you know, revved up and going, and they don't particularly like sativas because it doesn't have that type of effect for them. So, you know, I'd say that kind of classification there is generally pretty good, but there's outliers. And that's something that I'm particularly interested in my work looking at genetics, is what do those outliers tell us about everyone else? Because oftentimes we miss the big picture when we're only focused on what the average is. And, you know, when you can say, well, what's the difference between this person that's not responding the same way, that gives us a lot more insight about, you know, everyone else.
And what's the process for trying to define that? Is it a process of elimination?
Process of elimination, just really diving into the research and trying to, you know, experiment and figure things out and understand why people react the way they do. Let me give you an example about some of the genetics, just for your listeners, so they have a little bit more grounding in what we're talking about. There's a gene called the COMT gene, and this gene produces an enzyme that's responsible for breaking down dopamine in the brain. And so there's a certain variant that produces more COMT, and so those people naturally have less dopamine. And there's people that produce less COMT, and those people naturally have more dopamine. Well, it's been studied that for whatever particular reason, these varying levels of dopamine and these COMT variants seem to really heavily impact the way that people respond in terms of their short-term memory after smoking cannabis. So, you know, the stereotype of the stoner who can't remember his keys anywhere. You know, there's a good reason for that, but it totally doesn't apply to everyone, because there's people that have this certain COMT variant that seem to have somewhat of a protective effect against memory loss. And you know, I'm talking about keeping numbers in your head, remembering a telephone number, that type of short-term storage. And that's what they've studied with this. And then on the other hand, there's people that experience significant memory lapse after they smoke cannabis, and the stereotype rings true for them. But, you know, part of what I really enjoying bringing, you know, to the kind of to the table here is saying, let's not generalize everyone. Let's actually look at these individual responses, because I know plenty of people that are high functioning stoners, and it's likely because they are wired in a way that allows them to do that and not get some of the less desirable cognitive effects that some people do get.
Awesome. So how old is this study, this field of research, particularly with regard to cannabis?
So it's fairly new. I mean, we only mapped the human genome in, I believe, 2002, early 2000s. So the actual ability to map and catalog these things has only existed for a little over 15 years. And then when you really start looking and you know, the first 5 or so years of that was them figuring out what do we even do with this information. So really this is stuff that's, you know, just over 10 years old in terms of, you know, just the ability to look at this and, have a field of information around it. So yeah, it's pretty new. And the other factor too, of course, with cannabis is the legal ability to study it has been pretty hampered. So when you look at something like caffeine that has, I mean, caffeine is the most studied substance on the planet. Like there's more scientific research papers about caffeine than any other chemical. And when you compare that to how little there is really about cannabis, it's really too bad. But, you know, as the research climate changes, more and more studies look at this. And so one of the things that you have to pay attention to when you're looking at these studies is they're almost all done from an addiction problematic behavior standpoint, as opposed to studies that might be looking at health benefits of them, health benefits from cannabis. So part of what I've done in the way that I've kind of synthesized and put this information together is read a little bit between the lines in a lot of those studies to say, well, how can we actually use this information in a way that could help people and not just treat it like it's a problem, you know?
Yeah, totally. And so it's kind of really new in the grand scheme of things then, but it just seems like this has far reaching implications. And especially as it hopefully gets easier to do cannabis studies, we can do more stuff around the genetics. Because I mean, I have personal experience of when I consume cannabis immediately after, I'm not hungry at all. And it goes against the typical stereotype of having the munchies. But I know people that have the exact opposite. You know, we can enjoy this. We'll have like a vaporizer session and then straight after, I can't eat. I don't want to eat. And someone else can just be like, almost needs it to have an appetite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty interesting. And I think there's probably more people that get the munchies, but I'm sure there's also plenty of other people like yourself that for whatever reason, you know, the cannabinoid system is moving in the opposite direction as someone who would get the munchies. And, you know, we know from all kinds of studies looking at it, that it's really heavily involved in feeding regulation and hunger and all of that. So it doesn't surprise me to hear things like that anymore. It doesn't surprise me to hear the opposite experience that, you know, people are expecting from people's personal experience like that, because I've seen so many kind of individual weird variations like that. And I just love the coming revolution of what's going to happen when we're able to more, you know, customize strains and stuff to those particular needs and really understand this stuff. I really think we're just at the very beginning of the kind of journey there.
Totally. And yeah, it is going to completely disrupt everything we know about cannabis, how we consume it. So it's pretty incredible, pretty exciting. You mentioned, was it 99.9% of our genes are the same? So what, there's a 0.1 variance. Within that 0.1, how much scope for variety is there? Do we know like how many different varieties of gene types, or really is each one unique in a certain way?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so within each one of those genes, there's like a couple options, and then there's a bunch of ways that those combine. So there's something called a single nucleotide polymorphism, SNP, people call them just a SNP for short. So I'll just use the word SNP. But if you think about it, there's in a line of computer code, you know, say that code has 10,000 letters in it, you might tag like this is the 6,000th letter. And say from one person to another person, that letter might be a C instead of a T in that particular place. And so you could either have, because you have two strands of DNA, you could either have a CC, a CT, or a TT in that particular location. And, you know, most genes have a bunch of those places where those can differ. So you might get a bunch of combinations that are slightly different, but oftentimes there's a single place, a single SNP in that gene that is kind of the most important that really modifies the function in one way or the other. And then a lot of the other SNPs that are in that gene kind of just contribute to changing the function. But, you know, for example, there's a gene called CYP2C9. And it's a liver enzyme that breaks down a variety of substances, and THC is one of them. It also breaks down ibuprofen. It's a similar enzyme that kind of handles a bunch of different things. And there's you know, maybe 100 or so known SNPs in that gene, but there's one that seems to really heavily impact the function of that gene more than the others. And based on that, you can actually to some degree predict how you break down THC, where some people have more of this enzyme and it's a more functional enzyme and they break down THC quicker. And people that have the slow metabolizer variant have lower amounts of this enzyme and tend to have more THC circulating in their bloodstream after they intake cannabis. And there's a study that kind of broke these people out into these two groups, gave them a standardized amount of THC, and then monitored their blood levels, and had a pretty, you know, accurate kind of prediction come out of, you know, if you have this one variant in this gene, you're probably going to experience about, you know, 30 or 40% more THC in your system after a particular amount of time. And so those people also, of course, report more subjective intensity from the experience, and the more drowsiness, you know, even a couple of days later. So you, yeah, just based on that one particular letter difference in someone's code, you get those effects. Does that kind of
definitely make sense of that? Yeah, but how many letters in total are there then out in this coding, or is that not
there's quite a lot. I don't have the number off the top of my head, but at least a couple million.
Wow. Okay. Cool. So there are similarities and trends, but lots of intricacies and changes, and yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. And I mean, this is really just what we're able to look at right now. You know, this is cannabis genetics 1.0 to be sure.
And so is this accessible for now just through these studies, or recently there's been this proliferation, at least in the UK, I don't know what it's like in North America, but a lot of these DNA self-testing kits, you know, they send you a kit, I presume you, you know, take a sample of spit or blood or something and send it back, and they send you a whole load of information about your DNA. Is that worth doing for someone that's interested in perhaps finding out more about how genetics affects their cannabis consumption? Is that information there yet? Or?
As far as I know, there's not any of that there yet in terms of a direct-to-consumer test that's available. I actually have put together a custom genetic panel that I'm beginning to use with my own clients that, as far as I know, is the most comprehensive cannabis-related genetic panel out there. So if any of your listeners want to get in touch with me about looking into some of this stuff, I do have access to it, and I can ship these kits to the UK. We're actually contracting with a private lab because I'm sure you're probably aware of some of the privacy concerns around genetic testing and making sure that you own your data and know, you know, it's not getting sold to a pharmaceutical company. So my company and myself have contracted with a private company, so we just eliminate that whole thing and you own your data, and we also have access to more genetic variants than you would of those services. And you do think there's some value to it, but you really have to be aware of what you're getting, and you really have to understand that most of the interpretation that you get from a company like that is, you know, only going to be as personalized as you, as what you do with the information and how much you understand it. So that's part of what I do with clients, is really help them understand the information. Because as someone who looks through these studies and, you know, is interacting with this information on a daily basis, it does take a little bit more kind of looking and really experimenting with the information than what I think most of the direct-to-consumer companies are doing right now. And it's very powerful information. I don't think a lot of the companies out there are doing it justice.
Cool. But an emerging space to watch then.
Yeah, it's an emerging space to watch, and one I'm really excited to be a part of, and you know, develop these panels for people that are interested in their cannabis genomics. It's really quite fun to be able to contribute to the field.
Totally, yeah. It must be moving quickly, and I'm seeing the shift. And you rightly mentioned people's data privacy concerns, and people are very rightly concerned about that in the UK, for sure. You know, guarded about who they give data to, and well, of course, the big reason for that is still the illegality of full spectrum cannabis or anything that's not isolated CBD, basically. So yeah, it's moving along, but it's a chicken and egg, right? Of needing data to do studies. Where do you get that data from? Well, it's from people that are essentially breaking the law, and in some cases are alive illegally because they're resorting to use cannabis medicine. And one subject that I've talked a little bit about on a few of previous episodes is cannabis and schizophrenia and mental health. And of course, I'm sure you know that there is this massive kind of propaganda machine around cannabis causing mental health problems. And digging into the data around that, it doesn't really seem to be the case. It seems to be the case that there is an association between people that have mental health and consume cannabis. And there seems to be a small percentage of people that could have, you know, a psychotic episode, or that could have a negative, and you know, that's a small chance, but a real chance. Is this, seems to me like this is very much related to genetics, do you think?
Yes, absolutely. And that's one of the pieces that I'm very interested in, because for a long time, my personal bias, being someone who's pro-cannabis, was to dismiss that link and say, you know, this can't be true. It's safe for everyone. And I think that's, you know, kind of the knee-jerk response of most people that really deeply care about seeing cannabis legalized, because it does kind of throw a wrench in the works. But at the same time, being responsible, you know, scientifically minded pro-cannabis, you know, people, we have to be aware of that. And there is a pretty definitive genetic link between certain people that are predisposed to have psychotic type episodes and cannabis use. And there's specifically this gene called the AKT1 gene. And when you look at that gene in combination with a gene called the DRD2 gene, it's a dopamine receptor gene. They found that this has a very high correlation to psychotic diagnoses and cannabis use. And what they found was that in this particular very small percentage of the population, for people that had used cannabis as part of their really kind of dose response curve, of the more they used it daily, the more likely they were to have a psychotic diagnosis. And then on the flip side, the people that carried those same variants, if they had never used cannabis before, they had a much lower likelihood of being diagnosed with that. So, you know, I think it's worth, if you're someone who is thinking about using cannabis, or, you know, you're thinking about having your kids use cannabis for a medical condition, it's probably worth really looking at that and just, you know, screening for it and making sure that that's not a risk factor. You know, if I had kids and I were thinking about using cannabis for any kind of thing, I would want to look at that.
Cool. And is that, in your experience, just through someone having a history of mental illness, or is this something that could essentially have lain dormant and unnoticed through generations? So there may not be any kind of visible notice of that risk being present?
You know, that's a good question. I don't really know what the correlation is between previous existing diagnosis and that being part of the onset. That wasn't included in the study that I've seen. But that's a really good question.
Sure. And so with your coaching and the testing that you can facilitate here, so is that the kind of thing that you can kind of screen for there? Is this predisposition?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And specifically, you know, I'm not a doctor, so I can't provide any type of information about schizophrenia itself. But in terms of looking at a negative response to cannabis and having, you know, any type of episode, I'm able to give people that information.
Wow. I mean, that's so powerful. That's really great. And it's taking one of the biggest risks associated with cannabis use, and even looking at it as it is, I think the benefits far outweigh the risks when you look at how many people that cannabis helps as an essential medicine for so many different ailments compared to the small number of people that this is going to affect in a negative way. But this testing ability then alleviates that small risk as well for me. You know, it's incredibly powerful. It should almost be kind of a mandatory thing, you know. Everyone should understand what's in their DNA.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's going to be the standard, you know, not too far in the future here. Very early on in life, I would hope people start to begin to look at this information with their kids and set them up for success in the long run by, you know, really starting to understand, well, how is this person wired and how can we really positively affect, you know, their health with what we give them and what we don't. And I think for people that, you know, cannabis could present a problem, this is a way to find out. And while it's, you know, I'm sure we're going to learn a lot more in the future from in terms of what we know right now, I think this is very beneficial to anyone who's interested in getting into cannabis or, you know, that's already been in and just has a question about, you know, what's really likely to happen with their body and their mind as they continue to use it.
Totally. Yeah. And we've had a lot of press in the media in the UK recently around a couple of children that have epilepsy, and the CBD has treated their epilepsy and reduced their seizures by about 95%. But actually, they need cannabis oil with around 2% THC, and that reduces their seizures 100%. They're seizure free with that medicine. Let's say, hypothetically speaking, we had a child that needed this medicine to prevent seizures from epilepsy. Now, let's say that they had a genetic makeup gave them a high risk of, you know, a psychotic episode if they were to use high THC cannabis. Is there the technology, either today or possible in the future, to alter the genetic makeup, to kind of tweak the code to allow, you know, to take away that kind of risk and that psychotic strain?
That's a pretty big question. And, you know, technically we do have the technology. The CRISPR-Cas9 technology is there to be able to go in and edit those specific SNPs like that. But whether or not the risk factors of that outweigh the benefits, I don't know. I think there's a lot of it's a really interesting case you bring up, because it does kind of highlight the, you know, both the tremendous benefits of cannabis, but then also how you might approach that in a situation where there is the risk factor too. And I think that's something that, you know, any parent would probably have to weigh the benefits and risks of, you know, probably if the seizures are a major problem, then it's worth doing whatever you can. Technically you could edit those genes. I wouldn't recommend it right now, but, you know, it will be interesting to see. And then when you're talking about genetic editing, perhaps you could just go in directly edit some of the genes related to whatever's causing that seizure. And that might be more of an effective way.
It opens a can of worms, because then, yeah. well, why not tweak some intelligence, have a bit of better focus, better predisposition towards, I don't know, health, yeah, all of these things. It's incredible that we could potentially alter these things, but equally it seems scary as well.
Yes, there's a lot of big questions to answer about that, and at this point, I don't recommend anyone editing their genetic code unless you fully understand the risks and weigh them out and are a biohacker who's really, really willing to do that. I wouldn't experiment on your kid quite yet.
Do not try this at home. Disclaimer.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. And so what's next for you then, David? You mentioned this testing and this partnership with this company. Are you looking to do any kind of studies in terms of collecting this data and release that, or where's your area of focus?
Yeah, so right now my area of focus is developing this test out a little bit further. We're just beginning to run it with clients, and as we begin to collect more data with people like you, people like your users or your listeners, we'll probably publish something at some point once there's just more data available. And so, yeah, right now we're working on kind of the beta round of this test. And I'm also, I'm involved in health coaching. I actually have a webinar coming up if any of your listeners are interested that I call Optimal Health for Late Night Creatives, specifically looking for people that, are passionate about what they do and are looking for more energy, more focus, better mood, so that you can continue to do whatever it is you love in terms of, your creative art or expression, into well old age, and don't have to worry about health being an issue. And actually, health can be a something that propels your creativity forward. And actually, my background's in music, so that's why I'm very interested in that and helping other creatives do that. So if anyone's interested in that, you can go to my website. I have information about it there.
What's your website address?
It's david-krantz.com, KRANTZ. And if anyone's interested in looking into their cannabis genomics as well, they can send me a contact form on my site and we can talk and get that going as well.
Awesome, buddy. And what musical instrument do you play?
I play mandolin.
Play the mandolin?
Yeah, amazing. Play the mandolin. And I also produce electronic music. I do audio engineering as well.
Awesome. Yeah, that sounds great. Me too. I can't say I play the mandolin though. Did you... alter your genomes to learn that, or did you learn the traditional way to practice and graft?
I learned the traditional way, and then I altered my genome so I could learn more about genetics quicker.
Awesome. Hey, it's been a real pleasure speaking to you, David, and it's been very informative. So thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, absolutely. And just as one more note, I do have a full hour presentation on my website as well that goes pretty far into the cannabis genomics piece. So if any of your listeners want to learn more about the specifics of that, I have that available as well.
Awesome. I'm going to check that out myself as well. Sounds fantastic.
Excellent.
Thanks a lot. Bye for now.
Yeah, thank you.